clear. Oh, it comes off Hughes. A wee bit better. It is McHugh!
Hello and welcome to the MSC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jay and Buster will look back in the fantastic 3-0 victory over Aberdeen and we'll see what else comes up over the next three quarters of an hour or so. Guys, welcome along.
Yes. Do.
Jay, you were there. Buster was otherwise engaged yesterday, but what a turn up for the books. We certainly didn't expect the performance we got. We definitely didn't expect the result we got and it was thoroughly deserved. A fantastic team performance. A 3-0 victory over an Aberdeen side that were in very good form. We can certainly be very, very pleased with our afternoon's work.
Yeah, it was just a really, really enjoyable game, which I don't think we've been able to say too many times this season, if at all. Even the wins against the likes of Dundee and St Mirren, I think you always had it in the back of your mind that you were beating teams that were just far, far worse than we were. Whereas yesterday we were up against, okay, a side that maybe haven't did quite as well as they have done in recent years, but they still have players in that team that we would never have on our side in a million years these days. You know, guys like McGinn, Mackay, Steve and Shinny, those guys would walk straight into our starting lineup. So although it was a very poor Aberdeen performance, I think it's important to keep that in mind. I just thought we were really, really good. I think Aberdeen were the better team to begin with very early on. But I think once we got more into the game, obviously went ahead, there was only one team going to win after that. I thought all over the park, really good performances. Danny Johnson getting a brace was obviously very welcomed, but perhaps not as surprising, given if you go back and listen to just about every podcast for the last 3 months, or even read any forum or social media. I think most Motherwell fans have been clambering for Johnson to either partner Main or Bowman up front. And I think it was, you know, that was a big, big part of how we managed to win the game yesterday, because not only Johnson getting a double, but I thought Curtis Main had one of his best games for us since joining, and I include the games that he's, you know, scored a couple of goals in, because he was fantastic with Johnson running off him. The midfield trio were great. We got the ball down at times, even although we were back to the 3-5-2, we weren't going the long ball all the time. We were trying to play a bit of football. Even in Bulu, you know, slotted in at the back three and looked comfortable. I just thought all over the park, really, really good performances. Even Gillespie and goals, a very difficult situation for him, obviously. You know, it's not just a case of replacing a goalkeeper who's out. There's been a bit more of a media circus around it with the sort of circumstances with Trevor Carson. So he handled it really well and had a really good performance. But for me, overall, Liam Grimshaw was head and shoulders the best player in the park. I thought he was absolutely fantastic at right wing back, not just in terms of his defensive performance, you know, snapping into tackles, getting tore right in there, but even going forward, you know, he would just run and run and run. And there were a few spells yesterday where he would get the ball, realise there was nobody with him, and he would just take it as far down the park as he could. I just thought he was fantastic, and I thought he kind of epitomised the effort and the belief that was running through that team yesterday, and long may it continue.
Buster, I know that the kind of old stats come up when things aren't so good, and one of the main ones was that we'd failed to beat a team in the top six since the last time we beat Aberdeen back in November. Funnily enough, again, the week before the League Cup final, which was exactly the same circumstances as yesterday's game. While you can't pay too much attention to these stats, it's nice to get that monkey off our back as well with a very deserved 3 points.
Yeah, you know, as he says, I unfortunately couldn't make it yesterday, but when I was out and about, seeing we went 1-0 up, seeing Johnson had scored, and I thought, oh good, you know, that's obviously good news. But then the next time I checked my phone, or, you know, the next time it went again, I thought, it's obviously them coming back, isn't it? But nope, watch the highlights. Danny Johnson, you know, he's done exactly what we're at when we're needing somebody to do, stick the ball in the net. First goal, I bet you any money the two of you were screaming your heads for him to square it to you. I think it was Alan Campbell.
Absolutely.
Looking at the highlights, I thought Shea Logan, I think it was, did well to sort of drive him out wide. But then he seemed to gear up and think, my job here's done. And Johnson turned him and scored. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Great to see Turnbull scoring again. As you said there on OJ, Gillespie looks as if he had a good game on the highlights. And obviously, you know, you'd put your opinion forward in the group chat about Grimshaw as well. It's not something that stood out in the highlights, to be honest with you. Grimshaw having a good game, but you know, I'll take your word for it. He seems to have a good game against Aberdeen quite a lot. So it was fantastic to get 3 points, and you know, as you say, good to see guys like Mbulu getting in there, and hopefully, you know, he played well enough to hold down a first team position when it comes to, you know, next week or whatever.
Jay, a lot of changes to see. I think it was 4 changes to the starting 11 yesterday. A few that were enforced through injuries. Stephen Robinson has come under a lot of criticism for his selection and for his system of play. You now look at the fact that we've won 3 out of the last 4. I guess we can kind of almost put the Rangers game to bed as well with that much improved performance. The manager got a reaction out of his players. It's difficult to be too negative about anything about yesterday. It's just such a morale booster, such a significant victory. We thought, well, okay, we've beaten St Mirren, we've beaten Dundee, but those teams are very poor. Beating Aberdeen is a real statement of intent, and it's a real positive to hang on to, going into what we've described as such a massive month in December where we'll play a lot of games, we'll play a lot of teams that are ahead of us in the league. I've said in the last couple of weeks, it's been difficult to be enthused, it's been difficult to be asked about football. A performance like that can reinvigorate the supporters and just give that hope that we really were looking for.
Yeah, I think you've nailed it there. You know, a lot of the last couple of months has been very much about confidence, about how confidence has been such a massive issue, or lack of confidence has been such a massive issue at the club and in the playing squad. And you're right, when you're playing well and beating teams like St Mirren and Dundee, yeah, you can take a bit of confidence about it, but I don't see those games as being the kind of games that are really going to, you know, turn your season around. Whereas going out and smashing an Aberdeen side who are gearing up for a cup final on Sunday, I think can. Yes, we all know Aberdeen weren't particularly great. Even speaking to Aberdeen fans before the game, they weren't really full of praise about the way they're playing at the moment. But that's irrelevant to what we do. We can only beat the teams put in front of us. And Aberdeen, as I said earlier, man for man, have far more resources, far better players, and have been far more successful in recent years than we have. So to go out there and not just beat them, but beat them well and beat them fairly easily in a game that could and probably should have been 4 or 5 now, I think is a real, you know, a real statement. And it does, it kind of, you know, puts us in a completely different frame of mind going into this very difficult December. It was only a few weeks ago we were looking at December looming over the season and how we really, really needed to get points against the likes of St John's and Dundee and St Mirren, because we just didn't know where points were going to come from, basically from Rangers away onwards. So to, you know, beat Aberdeen the way we did and to do so after such a heavy defeat at Ibrox, I think it's fantastic. And Robinson deserves a lot of praise. You know, we could be very critical of him, and we have been this season when I think it's been needed. But I think he deserves the praise for the team that he put out yesterday. As you said, there were players missing that he had to deal with. He's, you know, it wasn't a case of picking a team to win the game with everybody fit. He had to respond to injuries, so some changes were forced. But he took the initiative. He went back to a back three, which perhaps wasn't, you know, that perhaps wasn't the fans' favourite. But I don't think MD's ever had a serious issue with 3-5-2 itself. It's the football and the manner of the football that goes along with it. So we've went back to a back three, but we've done so with a team that can still get the ball down at times. Yes, there was a long ball forward when needed, but we went to a back three and got the ball down. We utilised guys like Turnbull, Campbell and Grim, and Biggie in the middle of the park who can get the ball down. We got the ball wide to guys like Tate and Grimshaw who can run all day and get you forward up the park. And we saw a strike force that actually worked well together. You go back a few weeks ago, Sparrow, when you were talking about how Robinson had went on record saying that Mayne and Bowman were his first choice strike force. At the time, we laughed at that, and I think we can see why. Bowman and Mayne, you know, either one of them may work well up front with Johnson, but the two of them can't work well together. And we saw that exactly yesterday. It was, you know, the two of them worked so well together. As I said earlier, Johnson gets a couple of goals and Mayne puts in an absolutely fantastic performance. And I've seen online a lot of people naming Curtis Mayne as their man of the match. So that kind of sums it up. I know Robinson said after the game that Johnson has had to wait because Robinson and the management team have felt that he needs to work on a few things before he's brought into the first team. I'm happy to give, you know, the guys at the club the benefit of the doubt over that. But now that he's in there, now that he's taking his chance, I think for him to drop out again like he did earlier in the season would be scandalous. I think Mayne and Rock Johnson worked so well together yesterday that we actually have something positive at the top end of the park now to kind of go into December's games with the belief that we can actually score goals, which is something that we've really struggled to do this season.
First, Danny Johnson was handed a starting berth after quite a long spell on the sidelines. He obviously made a big impact in coming into the team and then subsequently has dropped out and found himself on the fringes, kind of only playing a sporadic part in the team. Scored two goals in the first half and put in a really good performance is a massive boost, isn't it? And hearing of Mayne and Bowman has been much maligned in this podcast. We don't think it's working. It's amazing what happens when the manager does change it up. Johnson and Mayne seem to have a very good understanding, a very good partnership. And it brought out a performance of Curtis Mayne as well, who, of the two, in Bowman and Mayne's case, I would have possibly said that Mayne was the player that should drop out. So Stephen Robinson can feel very vindicated in his decision yesterday, bringing Danny Johnson back in and subsequently getting a good performance out of Curtis Mayne as well.
Yeah, you know, I think you have both hit the nail on the head there. As you say, you know, Bowman and Mayne was Robinson's preferred pairing, but I think everybody in Fir Park could see that there wasn't something, you know, they were maybe too similar or something. There was just something not working there. Both of them would probably, as Jay said, be good fodder with a goal scorer, basically. And, you know, Danny Johnson looks exactly that. His, you know, second goal yesterday was about 4 yards out, and all he had to do was nod into the net. You know, that's what we're looking for. Somebody, you know, Curtis Mayne, Ryan Bowman, whatever, can do all the donkey work if you want, and we just need somebody to kick the ball in the goals. So it's good to hear Curtis Mayne had a good game because, as you said there, Sparrow, you know, I think Curtis Mayne's took a lot of stick, basically, because he's not been performing. Even when he grabbed a couple of goals in the losses to Hearts and whoever else it was at that time, I can't mind. He scored a couple of goals in two games anyway. You know, I thought he'd maybe come on to something, but it just didn't seem to work. It didn't seem to happen for him for there. So, you know, it'd be good to see, you know, if they can keep that up. Maybe Curtis Mayne will poke another couple of goals in as well, but it's good to see that, you know, they seem to have something that works as well, and it's good to hear you guys so enthusiastic about it as well.
Jay, going into the game, there was obviously a difficult week. It was a difficult fortnight, I guess, in the fact that you've got the international break following what was such an emphatic defeat against Rangers. Then the news of Trevor Carson's illness and subsequent battles with that as well must have really hit the squad hard. It's a very serious one, and first and foremost, I think we should establish that we wish Trevor all the best in his recovery. Football plays such a small part in these matters because it's a case of getting back to health. He's got a family to support. We're not really interested in when he'll be back in a Motherwell jersey. Just now, it's just all about his recovery. But things like that can obviously hamper a squad, a small squad at that. So for Mark Gillespie to come into the team yesterday and keep a clean sheet and be quite commanding, I listened to his interview after the game, and what he said is, because he knows that Trevor Carson will be out for a while, there wasn't that added pressure that he was coming in and had to do well, had to make an impact, because he possibly knows that he'll be in for the next however long, basically. But he handled everything that was thrown at him very confidently. I know Aberdeen weren't great and didn't create a great deal of chances, but anything that was put in front of Gillespie, he handled confidently, and that's a massive thing. We've talked about in the past that we've not had much luck with goalkeepers after the kind of Darren Randolph and John Ruddy. Is there this world we've went through kind of 5 or 6 years of not having many good goalkeepers until Trevor Carson arrived? So knowing that we've got a very sturdy deputy and Mark Gillespie is good news as well.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I don't think anybody was massively surprised that Gillespie's, you know, a decent goalkeeper. I mean, he was signed as a number one. It was interesting talking to a couple of Aberdeen fans before it who weren't aware who our substitute goalkeeper was, and so they were keen to know if we were going to be throwing in some inexperienced under-20s now that Carson was out. So the fact that we can call upon someone who has a lot of first team experience under their belt is obviously a bonus. But as I said earlier, it is a unique situation. It's a very, I don't know, strange is not the word, but it's a very unique illness that Trevor Carson's got. It's not something you see every day in football. It's not a run-of-the-mill injury where he's pulled up in training or been injured in international duty and the substitute keeper just steps in and therefore Carson is just listed as another player who's dropped out. It's a situation where, because of the uniqueness of Carson's illness, it has made the press, it has been built up quite a lot. There has been that kind of little media circus around it. I did notice at one point it was very high up in the BBC sports website, for example. So just little things like that make the situation that little bit different and perhaps shine a bit more of a spotlight onto Gillespie. So with that in mind, I thought he did really, really well. As you say, he didn't have a great deal to do in terms of really clear-cut chances for Aberdeen, but everything he did, I thought he did well. And you use the word commanding there, and I think that's spot on. You know, when balls were put into the box, I remember very few that Gillespie wasn't able to come out and collect, or at least, you know, deal with in some manner. So that gives us a lot of confidence, because you also don't know where a player like that's mind is at this stage in the season, having been brought in during the summer, perhaps thinking that he's going to be a number one, finding himself behind Trevor Carson for so long this season. And with the January transfer window only a little bit away, you wonder if there was maybe, you know, a little bit of restlessness, thoughts maybe in the back of the mind of maybe going back down south or trying to find somewhere to get some first team football. So with all that in mind, to then be suddenly thrown into that situation, particularly after losing 7 goals at Ibrox the week before, you know, it's a big deal. And I thought he did really, really well. And you even look at the back three, you know, he's got a back three in front of him that I thought all did really, really well. And Bulo slotted in there and looked as though he'd been there for weeks. And that's all part of it, because no doubt Gillespie would have been a part of organising that defence, you know, communicating with them throughout the game. So that's another bonus, because the situation we've been in this season, you know, up until now, in terms of losing matches, in terms of the negativity around the season, if we'd lost Carson and had either brought in, you know, a young goalkeeper or a backup goalkeeper who isn't really particularly good, or Gillespie had went in there and had a bit of a nightmare, I think that would have, you know, obviously just added to the negativity there has been this season. Whereas when you're in a situation, like you say, where we've had so many poor goalkeepers over the last few years, to lose somebody like Carson and be able to instantly call upon a really good, really experienced first-choice goalkeeper in Mark Gillespie, is a fantastic position to be in. And there'll be actually few sides around our level in this division, I think, we'd be able to do the same.
We've obviously talked there about Trevor Carson's illness, as Jay described, a very unique one, a very unique situation. It is serious, and the club haven't made any bones about that. But what we've got in a chief executive like Alan Burrows, who has suffered from the same thing, and a support network, it seems like a very tight-knit place. Trevor Carson will get the very best support through this, and that's reassuring. It's quite scary to think a guy of 31, 32, healthy, an athlete, can develop this condition. But I suppose it's a reminder to all of us, really, isn't it?
Oh, of course. You know, as you said, these things, football doesn't matter in these sort of situations. So, you know, best of luck to him on his recovery. But it's a very strange injury. You know, it reminds me of that old football management game where you used to get players who had broken noses for fighting in clubs and stuff. I can't remember what one it was, but
FIFA Soccer Manager.
Soccer Manager, I think it was.
FIFA Soccer Manager. I remember playing FIFA Soccer Manager, and Stevie Woods got ruled out of my team because he had dived at the foot of a mugger outside a nightclub and had injured himself doing so.
It was whatever the name it was that game I was thinking. Anyway, it's like, you know, a weird injury. I was going to say weird and wonderful, but obviously it's not wonderful, but it's a strange one. And as you say, you know, he'll get the best support possible. I'm sure he can ask Flo questions about it as well, as you says, if, you know, Burrows, Allen's had the same sort of situation there. But on Gillespie as well, again, just going by the highlights, I thought he played very well. There would have been a lot of eyes on him, as you says. The one thing I did sort of think was he was a bit more, again, this was just a highlight, so he probably caught a lot more crosses than I seen on the highlights, but I thought he was a bit punchy. You know, every shot seemed, don't get me wrong, good saves. They went, you know, the punches went a fair distance out of play or whatever. But, you know, he sort of might, that sort of stereotypical foreign goalkeeper. I know he's English. I'm not suggesting he's foreign. I'm just saying, and that sort of punchy crossy sort of
worms here.
Me and Nigel Farage just gone for a pint later. But it's you know, it seemed to do very well. So it's good to see that we have got a so far looking very decent backup goalkeeper at the moment, because I think we've said before, you know, we think he was brought in to play football to be in the team. You know, Carson ended up staying, so you know he's shown a lot of patience, and he'll get a wee run in the team now, and hopefully he can show us what he can do.
Yeah, I'll finish that up with just wishing Trevor Carson again all the best in his recovery. As we say, football pales into insignificance in matters like this. A very serious situation, but hopefully he's now on the mend, and we wish him all the best. We'll look ahead to next week's game against Livingston. And Jay, I suppose if we had spoken a fortnight ago, we would have been all doom and gloom about this one, but Livy are beginning to struggle. They've had a few bad results. By all accounts, they certainly weren't hammered at Ibrox yesterday. They lost 2 goals in the last 10 minutes and competed pretty well over the course, something that we certainly didn't manage to do at Ibrox. That being said, we've beaten them in the League Cup at Almond Vale, or whatever the hell their stadium's called. What's it called now?
The Tony Macaroni slice of pizza, get yourself a free cheese, I don't know, it's Tony Macaroni something or other. Is it not one of the daft long names?
Yeah, I think it's the Tony Macaroni Arena now you mentioned that, but we'll just call it Almond Vale. That'll do. We've beaten them at their place in the League Cup. We held them to a draw in a game that I think if we had played anywhere near our best, we could have definitely got a more positive result from the game. It's one we should fancy. Livy beginning to struggle a wee bit. We've won 3 out of our last 4. And again, I'm quite keen to put that Rangers result to one side, because if you were asked about these next 4 games and offered 9 points, you'd have bet anyone's hand off if they had offered that. So we're in decent form, and we must be massively buoyed by events of yesterday. It's a game to look forward to and really believe that we can come out with yet another positive result.
That's it. I mean, you're spot on. It just shows you how quickly football can turn around. If we had lost yesterday, we would potentially be talking, you know, about how that was us in this horrible run of games where, you know, we are looking at a game that is winnable, a game that could see us taking 4 wins from 5 games, which is would be a phenomenal position to be in, given how our seasons went up until this point. I don't think the sort of the dip in form for Livingston is anything other than inevitable. I think, you know, I know they had a fantastic start and they were getting great plaudits, but as I said a few weeks ago, their objective was always going to be simply to stay in the division, and all they've really done up until now is make sure that they've got a big gap between themselves and the likes of St Mirren and Dundee up until this point. But I think they were always going to fall away a little bit. There's the combination of them perhaps catching teams cold and teams not really knowing how to play against them, allied to the fact that they are perhaps buoyed by this introduction, you know, to the top division. So that was always going to happen. I think it would be very rare if they'd kind of replicated that season that they had, you know, whatever it was, 15, 20 years ago, where they ended up going straight into Europe. So I'm not surprised by that, but what I'm surprised is if you'd said to us a couple of weeks ago that a win on Saturday would see us within 2 points of Livingston, I wouldn't have seen that coming. And I think that says a lot of what we've done in the last couple of weeks. To be, you know, on 17 points after Saturday and only 2 points behind Livy would be a phenomenal, phenomenal position to be in. It will still be a very difficult game. They are a strong physical side. It will be interesting to see how we approach it. I think, you know, the game at Fir Park, we tried to out-Livy Livy. And, you know, obviously they would have been happier with the point, I think, overall. I think we're now starting to see that there is positives in trying to play through guys like Biggie and Turnbull and trying to get the ball down at times. And if we do that on Saturday, then I think there's every chance we can take a win. And it, as I said, it just shows you how quickly football can turn around, because it wasn't that long ago that I think, in fact, before yesterday's game, I was saying to most people that if we're not playing St Mirren or Dundee, I think we'll lose. Whereas just the manner of the performance yesterday, the confidence boost that it would have given, not just the fans, but the players, I think we can absolutely go to, you know, Tony Macaroni, whatever, on Saturday and fully look to take at least a point, if not the win. And what a position it would be then going into that December on 17 points. It would be, you know, something that would have been unthinkable just a couple of weeks ago.
First time I'm a wee bit annoyed at Jay there, because he mentioned the league table and the fact it would be 2 points behind Livy with a win, which was my next question. And then he mentioned the out-Livy-Livy statement as well, which I actually thought that Livy was an out-Motherwell on that occasion. But so I'm kind of at a lack of questions here, but there's an easy one with a trip to Livingston, and that is their pitch. It's been much criticised, I think rightfully so. I think it was voted the worst surface in the UK at one point. That is an added factor, but we've been there already this season, possibly when it was worse than it is currently, and we've got a positive result. Really, what I'm looking for from Stephen Robinson here is the team hasn't been settled at any point in the season, and part of that is due to injuries, and that can be helped, of course it can, but he's got a side that have played very positively. He's had to make adjustments to it. I really hope that we find a wee bit of consistency in our starting team now. And going into this big run of games, he will have to rotate on occasion. But let's hope that he's moving towards now a situation where he's found a favoured first 11.
Yeah, you know, it'd be great, you know, if the first 11 were easily identifiable because they were also much better than the rest. But it's kind of a strange one, because who do we have missing yesterday? Cadden, McHugh. I can't really think who it. Obviously, Bowman actually as well was changed out. So you'd maybe think that Chris Cadden, not so much a shoo-in, but he'd be a top pick for, you know, a lot of the fans to be in the team. Carol McHugh as well. I think he's one that splits opinions there. I think he does a good job at times, but as we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, he's a bit of a hothead, we'll say, then when he's being booked and then making terrible tackles 2 seconds later. So, you know, there's these two, at least those two or three players there, who can be, you know, changed in and out of the team. Whether or not, you know, they will be, I think, you know, all things, you know, injuries aside and stuff like that, I'd like to think that, you know, the team that played on Saturday has earned the right to play again. That obviously all comes down to the tactics and, you know, how the manager wants to change it, basically. But I don't see there being any problem other than the pitch. Yeah, I think, you know, as you mentioned, Livingston's brilliant run that they went on bagged them quite a few points, and we'll probably see them throughout the end of the season. They'll pick up, you know, points like the rest is, but they'll probably see them throughout the end of the season to keep them well above, you know, the bottom two, who seem to be a wee bit adrift, to be honest with you, with them. But I think we can go there. I think we can win. And other than their shite pitch, you know, that would be my only issue with that. I hate Plastic Parks in general, and theirs looks atrocious. So that would be my only worry about the game coming up.
Jay, the issue with McHugh, obviously, last year's captain, he relinquished his captaincy during the summer, but he's always remained as a staple part of Stephen Robinson's team. I'd be very disappointed if Carol McHugh came back in, given that we've seen Alan Campbell benched in recent occasions. For me, Campbell came back in and did exactly what Alan Campbell does. He puts in an incredible shift. He's very reliable. He's strong in the tackle. He's positive. He moves the ball forward. He seemed to be at times talking David Turnbull through the game as well, which is great to see, a kind of relationship between two academy graduates that have made their mark in the first team. My reluctance is, and my concern is, I guess, that Stephen Robinson turns round and thinks, well, Carol McHugh's served me well. Carol McHugh is an established professional that's played numerous more games than Alan Campbell has, and reverts to type. Carol McHugh, for me, has to earn his place back in the team rather than just be granted it. After, I guess, letting us down at Ibrox, his sending off was a complete turning point of the game, whether you think the second one was a booking or not. must have mentioned it on the podcast following the Rangers game. He had a stupid tackle right after his initial booking, which I'm not sure it was a booking either, mind you. But the Carroll McHugh has let us down a couple of times and deserves a spell out or a spell to work his way back into the team. We've just got a massive result against Aberdeen, a very emphatic victory. There shouldn't be a place for McHugh if there's no injuries or any changes to the over the course of the next week or so.
I mean, there shouldn't be a place for any player to come into that team unless there's, you know, injuries over the next couple of weeks. This is the next couple of days. It's as simple as that. If the idea of a lack of confidence has been such a big issue, then I fail to see where the benefits would be winning a game in the style we did on Saturday and then suddenly dropping people out of that team. If that's not going to, you know, shake confidence, I really don't know what will. The guys, the 11 guys who played yesterday and played so well will be absolutely flying after that yesterday. If confidence is so important, which we obviously know it is, then I imagine they'll be turning up for training right up for it and really looking forward to Saturday's game. So I see absolutely no reason why, whether it's McHugh, whether it's Cadden, you know, why anybody should be going back into that team. The performance was there to suggest that every player in that side deserves to start against Livi, particularly when you factor in the fact that, you know, Livi tend to play with a back three. We know that Robinson favoured a back three in the games we've played against them previously. So there's no reason to assume that he's going to change the system. So if we're going with the same system, why change the personnel? Even Christian Mbulu, who, you know, didn't have a fantastic game, still slotted in and was still, you know, solid alongside Hartley and Aldred, still did everything they had to do perfectly well. So yeah, I agree with what you're saying. I don't think McHugh should be going into the team anyway. I think he has, as we discussed, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I think he's shown enough to suggest he's a bit of a liability until he reins it in a little bit. So I don't see any reason for him to go into the team regardless. But I don't see why we would make any changes. If come Saturday morning, if there's no injuries before then, if it isn't the same 11, I will be, you know, really, really surprised. I just don't see why you would change that team.
We'll give a quick shout out to the sponsors. And how would you like a free case of craft beer? Well, as a listener to the MFC podcast, we'd like to thank you for listening with the help of our friends at beer52.com. All you need to do is go to beer52.com/MFC and claim your free case. Beer 52 is the world's most popular monthly craft beer discovery club, searching out incredible craft beers and passing them on to their customers. There's a whole world of craft beer out there, and this is your chance to get on board with discovering it. All you need to do is pay the $2.95 postage, and you'll receive your case the very next day. Beer 52 is a 5-star rating in Trustpilot, so it's easy to see that their members love their service. So head on over now to beer52.com/MFC and order your free case. First, yesterday the draw for the fourth round of the William Hill Scottish Cup was made. And we were paired with Ross County. A great chance to get our own back in Don Cowie after a pathetic play action in the Iron Brew Cup last week. County going well, they're second in the championship just now. It's a difficult game, I guess. The pressure will be on us as a Premiership side against a side that had established himself in the top flight as well. But I guess the objective is, when you go into these draws, is avoid a top flight side, avoiding an away fixture. We've done both of that. We've obviously had two great cup runs last season. We've got to the quarterfinals of the Betfred Cup this year. It's a tie that we should be looking to win, and then you go into the last 60, and who knows what can happen from there.
Yeah, as you said, we're at home. I've not really kept much of an eye on the first division this season, to be honest with you. But Ross County, even when they were you know, in this division and got relegated, it was always a tough place to go, and Ross County always usually give us a good game. So I would expect us to win. I'd hopefully win. And as you say, that's the whole thing about the cup, isn't it? You know, you only need to win 5 or 6 games, and that's you won the thing. Sounds a lot easier than it is, obviously. But it's...
We found that out.
Well, you know, as I say, with 2 finals last year, quarterfinals of the Betfred Cup this year, before we got put out of Hearts. So it'd be good to go at least a step further than that. You know, semi-finals, get back to Hampden. We've not really been at Hampden much this year, so I think a few of us are missing that, and it'd be good to see if we could. I think basically if we got to the semis of a cup, it'd be considered a successful cup run. But one step at a time, and we should really beat Ross County at home.
Yeah, I thought County were fairly poor when they came to Fir Park last week. They were stretched to their very limits. I know they left out a few first teamers, but while County was pretty much what their regular starting 11 is, the youngsters, even with 10 men, continued to press and really give them a fright. I think that can give us plenty of confidence right off the bat. The only kind of concern I've got is the expectation. That is seen almost as a comfortable starter for us, and I would imagine on the day it'll be anything but an easy 90 minutes for us.
That's it. I mean, obviously can't comment last week being in Albania, but by all accounts it does sound as though we gave them, you know, a good game. That said, we're talking about a side, you know, second in the Championship, you know, chasing promotion. So they're a side that probably are looking at Motherwell as a half decent tie. It's all very well us sitting here and saying, "Oh, it's a home tie against a team in the division below, and so we should be winning." But you know, up until yesterday, we were talking about how dire a season we've been having, and if we hadn't won yesterday, I'm not sure we would be saying the same thing. I think Ross County would be looking at the league table, the Premiership league table, looking at how we've been doing this season, and would probably have seen that draw as a fairly attractive one. They would no doubt have preferred it to be at home, but I think they'll come to Fir Park thinking that they've got a very good chance of progressing. That said, there's a lot of football to be played between now and then. Who knows where each respective side will be by the time we play. But at this moment in time, I think it'll be an incredibly tough game. We might go into it, you know, flying up the division after a few more great victories, and County may have dropped out of the title race, or it might be vice versa. We might be back down the bottom sort of reaches of the league, and County might be sitting top and absolutely flying. So it will be interesting to see how the next month or so pans out before the game. But I certainly don't think it will be anything but a really, really tough game.
Moving matters away from Motherwell, just to finish, the TV rights were up for grabs again in 18 months' time. We'll see the end of BT Sport covering Scottish football. Premier Sport have taken on the Scottish Cup. They'll share it with the BBC and Sky. And also, Sky now have utter control over the Scottish Premiership coverage. It's a situation that has been met with a lot of disappointment by Scottish football fans. I guess, Buster, the bigger picture is that BT Sport weren't able to match Sky's offer. They clearly regard the Dunfermline match as a much bigger thing than any of the other games. Quite often, 10 minutes coverage before, 10 minutes coverage after. And that's the end of it. And you'll compare that to their coverage of, for example, the English Premier League or even the English Championship, where it's in-depth, it's detailed, it's possibly the benchmark for football coverage across the world, actually. They seem to treat our game with a fair bit of disdain. They quite often get things wrong, even simple things like club logos. I saw yesterday they were reporting that we had beaten Aberdeen 2-0. It's fairly pathetic. They're really going to need a rocket up their arse and take some inspiration from the way that BT have covered the game in the last three or four seasons, where it's been passionate, it's come across as they very much care about the game. It's going to be hard to fill that void unless Sky perhaps employ new personnel, perhaps look at BT Sport and employ a few of their guys like Chris Sutton, Stephen Craigan, who have really thrown themselves into it and made it a very enjoyable experience as a viewer. Sky need to learn some big lessons in these next 18 months and bring their coverage to the next level. Otherwise, it's going to look fairly pathetic, isn't it?
I think that's it, though. They've got 18 months to, set up their format, try and learn some things about Scottish football as well. I suppose the bottom line is Sky's coverage is laughable. It's shite. I don't think there's anybody out there who would take Chris Boyd and Chris Commons over Sutton and Craigan, as you says. You know, even I think Alan McCoist was involved in the last couple of games that BT done. You know, whether you like him or no, Alan McCoist, he's a fairly big character, and you know, he's got a wee presence about him. So Sky basically will have to, as you says, learn from that. Maybe take some of their personnel, as you says, but they've got 18 months to work on it. Bottom line is, you know, BT weren't offering the cash. It's all right saying, you know, everybody prefers BT, but if Sky are going to give you the cash, it's going to help your club, it's going to help Scottish football. Maybe it'll probably go to Rangers and Celtic as usual, but, you know, that's the bottom line, basically. They weren't willing to pay, or weren't willing to match Sky, I suppose. So, you never know, there might be something that they can do, still keep a wee bit of interest on their channel, maybe show the highlights, you know, sort of a sports scene programme, like something like that, and maybe even have the sort of, you know, the sort of programmes you have before the weekend, looking forward to the fixtures and stuff like that. They could do something like that, and they could still obviously possibly, you know, attract a few viewers that way, if that's even possible. But other than that, Sky have got it. They've got to learn their lessons. I doubt they will, to be honest with you, and it'll all be about the four Old Firm games every year as usual.
Jay, another disappointing element of it is the Premier Sports coverage of, I think they've got the League Cup and they'll also have games in the Scottish Cup as well. It's another subscription. We put a lot of money into the game, whether it be through season tickets, the Welsh Society, merchandise of a season. You've got your Sky Sports package. A lot of us just now will have BT Sport as well. Premier Sport is another element added into it now. If you're a football fan and you want to watch, for talking sake, the Scottish Premiership, the Scottish Cup, the League Cup and the Champions League, that's three separate subscription packages you need. It's expensive, and I don't think it's these deals are done with the consumer in mind. You'll have a lot of people that will opt out of one, two, maybe all of the coverage of it for that reason. They're priced out of the game, which is quite frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm speaking as somebody who doesn't watch a great deal of football on the telly. I'm kind of torn on it. Yes, I understand if you want to sit and watch all, you know, football from the couch, then free subscriptions might be a lot. But there might be fans out there who, you know, the fact that they're having to pay those three subscriptions, it might actually, you know, throw up the opportunity to actually go to a game then. You know, if they can't afford, if they don't want to fork out to watch football on the telly, and maybe they'll put that money towards going and watching maybe the local team or something like that. So, you know, as much as I sympathise with folk who obviously need to put their hand in their pocket to pay for more and more things these days, you know, my priority is still the fans that actually go to games. And so there might be a, you know, albeit a small one, but it might be a shining light in there, or a silver lining that maybe it might inspire folk to go back and actually watch games of football rather than doing so from the couch. In terms of, you know, the whole BT Sport thing and the Sky Sports thing, it's unfortunate. You know, I agree with what's already been said. There's no doubt whatsoever that Sky Sports just could not give an utter fuck about Scottish football. The mistakes they make are so basic. You know, the running things about, you know, getting badges wrong and all that kind of stuff. I think even they had us down beating beating Albania 3-2 when Scotland had actually beaten Israel. You know, there's just so little interest given to Scottish football that it is disappointing. But in saying that, Sky Sports, by all accounts, have offered, you know, so much more money than BT Sport, it's not even funny. And as much as I appreciate that guys like Chris Sutton, Stevie Craigan, and even just the whole coverage of BT Sport put Scottish football out there in a greater light, I think if you had to offer me the chance of, you know, a far more financially secure Motherwell, you know, in terms of TV revenue, or the chance to watch Celtic versus, I don't know, Dundee with Stevie Craigan and Chris Sutton providing analysis, I'll take the former every day of the week. So as much as it's disappointing, I'm content that at least the club will be seeing a fair amount of cash out of that.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. You've got to, I guess, is look at the bottom line, and that's difficult to do as supporters. We don't really concern ourselves a great deal with club finances unless it's a drastic situation, but TV money is a massive source of revenue, so you've got to go with the companies that are paying the most amount of money, and in this case it is Sky and it is Premier Sports, so we'll see how it goes. I watched the Inside the SPFL show yesterday morning before going to the game, and it's just Chris Boyd and Chris Commons reading off auto cues and jokes, and it's just a dreadful effort at punditry. I actually find Chris Commons worse than Chris Boyd, I must confess, but it's crap. And there is guys like, as Buster mentioned, guys like McCoist and Cragan and Sutton, even Michael Stewart. There's a lot of guys that are interesting, they're engaged in the game, they know what it's all about, and that comes across in their coverage of the game. We need more people like that and less people like the likes of Commons and Boyd, because it's dreadful to watch. Kenny Miller was on it, and it was just like one big boys' club. They had a few digs at Livingston, a few observations about Dundee, the kind of basic stuff. It's so crap. I kind of watched it thinking, all right, well, this is the week they've got the rights. They might actually up their game a wee bit, but clearly they've got these 18 months and they're going to use every day of them to see whether they can be asked to actually improve it. But I don't think they will. They'll concentrate in the big games. Of course they will. They'll maybe manipulate the schedules to have, you know, Super Sundays like Hibs versus Hearts and Rangers versus Celtic. But in the grander scale of things, they're not going to give a shit. And they've got the English Premier League, they've got the Championship, and that's all that really interests them. This is just paying a year's deal to broadcast these four of Durham games a season and maybe have the opportunity to show a Rangers-Celtic semi-final of the Scottish Cup or something like that. It's so half-arsed, and to anticipate anything other than the fact that they'll just stick to the same tried and tested and failed regime, I just can't see it. I really can't see it.
So I was just going to say, like, the thing is, as much as I agree with what you're saying, I think what the whole debate does do is it kind of acts as a kind of a sign, or it kind of shows just how poor the coverage of Scottish football is as a whole, and how poor the sort of our Scottish football journalists are at selling our game, and how poor sort of the SPFL and the SFA are at selling our game. The fact that, you know, you just had to look on Twitter when this debate was going on, and when it looked as though Sky Sports were going to indeed get the rights, it was almost, you know, in mourning. There were football fans distraught the fact that BT Sport weren't going to get it. And rather than being distraught, it's about time we asked ourselves why, that we're kind of pinning so much positivity onto just another football channel. You know, at the end of the day, it should be the job of all pundits. It should be the job of all journalists, whether it's, you know, the likes of Hugh Keevans, Chick Young, you know, BBC, STV, you know, Super Scoreboard, whatever it is. It should be the job of all these guys to be promoting Scottish football and selling the product we've got. It shouldn't be the job of Stephen Cragan and Chris Sutton and BT Sport. So we could all sit and talk about how poor Sky Sports is, and it is, but I think it's just indicative of a very poor sort of culture within Scottish football journalism, that it's far easier and far better in some cases to kind of do our product down, do our sport down, slate people rather than actually talking it up. And that's why BT Sport is going to be sadly missed, not because it was fantastic coverage, it's more because they actually talked our game up and hyped our game up. And it's something that nobody else has done, and that's the issue.
Well, again, I completely agree with you. There was the tweet a couple of weeks ago, somebody had a dig at Keith Jackson because his article was like a fucking it was awful, basically. But the one thing that I've just been thinking there, you know, while we're talking about it, is where do these games fit in? You know, basically, when are these games going to be on? Because as we chatted before we were recording, we were making comments about Huddersfield and whoever, Wolves Huddersfield, they're being their Super Sunday and stuff like that. Now,
I think Argentinian football there. I thought we were going to warm its way in.
We'll get to the Copa Libertadores in a minute. You know, I think they've got a game at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, something like that, then a game at 4 o'clock. So at what point do, you know, they show Dundee versus Motherwell, because, you know, they probably have to the contract will probably stipulate they have to so many shite games a year. So at what point do they put Motherwell Dundee on? Is it going to be 3 o'clock on a Sunday where people have just finished watching Arsenal, then they're waiting on Wolves starting or something like that? You know, is it just going to be jammed in there, or are we going to end up with shite times like 5 past 6 kickoffs on a Sunday. I'm sure we used to have them 20 years ago when Sky had the deal as well. So, you know, where does it fit in? It's going to be shite. I agree with you, Sparrow. It's going to be shite either way. But you know, it's and Jay's point, obviously, he's not really that bothered, to be fair, because he goes to the football, doesn't he, watch it. Fair dues, but you know, no be that, Jay, when you have to go to fucking Motherwell versus Livingston at 8 o'clock on a Sunday night.
The other thing, and this could take us all night to discuss, but the fact that Rangers and Celtic home games are limited as well doesn't really allow them to show all the biggest games, if you know what I mean. Like, for me, like a Celtic Hibs the other week, I think it was, what, 4-2, a cracking game, two of the most attacking, exciting teams in the league. We kind of see that because Rangers and Celtic basically don't want their home games being shown on the television because it'll affect the crowds. Why do the rest of us have to suffer then?
Because we're not Rangers and Celtic.
Yeah, basically.
That is literally the answer to that question.
Yeah. It's a good point. Do you know what as well? I mean, how many people wouldn't go to, for example, Motherwell Aberdeen, you know, if it was on telly? How many Motherwell fans wouldn't go? Maybe 50? I know it's still 50 people, but I don't believe there'd be that many Motherwell fans, for example, who would be persuaded to stay in the house, you know, if the Motherwell game was on telly. Unless it was pissing down or snowing or some shit, you know. But whereas, if you're a Celtic or Rangers fan, and you're guaranteed so many games are going to be on the telly, your home games as well, you probably might be like, well, I'm not going to give them £600 for a fucking season ticket, so I'll give Sky my £1,200 a month, or £1,200 a year instead. So, you know, I can see what you're saying, Sparrow, but unfortunately, as Jay says, we're no Rangers or Celtic, that's it.
I'll finish up by offering our thanks, firstly, for the turnout on Wednesday night for the quiz and Q&A night, particularly to Keith Lasley, Donald Jenow, and Graham McGarry, who formed the panel, and really, it was very, very interesting, really good night, and all three guys spoke very, very well, so we do greatly appreciate that. To Joe McElvey for helping myself make up the quiz. As usual, it was at Joe McElvey level, so I think the winners actually got about 50% of the questions right, because some of the stuff was so obscure that only Joe McElvey would have actually known the answers to some of the questions. I'll share some of the rounds on Twitter and get other people involved.
Well, I was going to say, get them to us. Unfortunately, you know, I was away during the week and I couldn't make it. Seems like there was a lot of good work went on, and it seems like it was a cracking night. But I think what you should do is me and Jay should go head to head in the wee group chat.
Well, do you know what? Consider that done. Well, in fact, 8 o'clock the night, and don't worry, I'm actually going to share this with everyone else as well. So this isn't just a conversation between three pals. Where I'm going to, but I was trying to work out a kind of way that you could do it almost like HQ.
You can be Beric.
No, I'm no Beric.
we'll date on Skype.
That's essentially you just called me a massive dick. That's not very pleasant. Anyway, £110 raised for the Scottish Association of Mental Health, with Craig Hargrave from Chemical Underground Records donating an incredible amount of stuff, some amazing music memorabilia that we're going to be firing up in the Twitter page over the next couple of weeks or so. There's a couple items up already. Great, massively appreciated. And as I said, it wasn't the best attended event that we've ever done, but I don't think anything's a redundant process. We got a lot of stuff for the food bank as well, which was dropped off on Thursday night. I didn't actually realise the guy lived two doors down, so I met him at Motherwell train station, despite the fact that he walked 40 yards to his door. But again, thank you to everyone who supported the event. We do really appreciate it, and hopefully going forward we can have more of these occasions. When you see some of these quiz questions, please direct all your abuse to at Crazy Leg Joe and tell him how much of a right. Finally, the toy drive, the third annual toy drive yesterday, again, the generosity of the Motherwell supporters and the Aberdeen supporters, it must be said, greatly appreciated. These things are quite overwhelming at times. There's not a great deal of planning has to go into it, but when you see the amount of stuff being donated and the generosity, you can't help but be quite taken aback by it. Jay, it was a great turnout again, wasn't it? And I guess by doing a small bit, we can make a massive difference.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it's just one of those things where, unfortunately, it'd be great to live in a world where such things aren't required, but when you put out the call, there's always, you know, every time over the last 3 years, there's always a great response, just sort of endless Motherwell and, you know, whoever the opposition happens to be that day. Obviously, yesterday was Aberdeen, just endless folk coming up with gifts and bags and things like that. So, yeah, it was fantastic and, you know, a lot of things collected, which was great.
Guys, I think that's pretty much all we've got for this week. The highlights of yesterday's game have just come on Sports Scene, so if you want to switch your tellies on and pause it just now, then that would be an ideal moment. But yeah, a much more positive place to be in this week, and let's hope we can continue that into the Livingston game and the Celtic game following that. Thanks very much for your time.
No more, cheers.
Are you not thanking us, Jay? No, that's fine.
I said cheers at the same time as Buster, but he's just louder than me.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
I need to find somebody to tear me away from the car crying babies and switchblade days, the bark of the unemployment hounds and the thud of the thick white skull on the ground. I won't die in the bony arms of the state to be laid to rest in the wake of a faded town. My home, there's a big white house at the end of the road. I see you wrapped in Egyptian thread in a marble garden, immune to the mess. If you leave this world in a rhinestone shroud, we could finally make your father proud. If I leave this world in a loaded daze, I'll finally have and eat my cake. I wanna die like a rich boy diving in a hydrocodone dream. You can die like a rich girl by me, or how the magazines will grieve. I wanna die like a rich boy bathing in a milk bath I could drown. I wanna die like a rich boy, even if we're as poor as we are now. I wanna die like a rich boy drowning in a lake that bears my name. You can die like a rich girl by me, flushed and radiant with fame. I wanna lie and sleep on the TV in a golden cardboard crown. I wanna die like a rich boy, even if we're as poor as we are now. Well, I found you now, so tear me away from the feral street they lumped us in. I'll be Shakespeare's moonstruck king. We can lose our minds at the top of the hill. We burn cash and carry a decadent flame into the night and beyond the grave.